Qua sopra.
Ai.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
All right, and hello everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast, episode 155 of the show. And it's a big one because it's the best time of the year, worst time of the year. I'd say best time of the year because it is the start of a new MLS season. Finally upon us, one of the shortest but longest off seasons I'd say in a while. It's one of those where, yeah, it wasn't the 6-month marathon or whatever the heck 2021 was, and when they had the season start in April. But hey, it's after a World Cup, after everything that happened. Feels both like yesterday that the Whitecaps played Minnesota United in their last game of 2022, which feels both like yesterday and forever ago. But now, Real Salt Lake in town at BC Place. First BC Place game in a while. Lots to look forward to. And before we dive into RSL, which should be a great matchup, of course, for the Whitecaps, get their season underway. Always some good games at home versus RSL. Some great goals, too, if you're a fan of those sorts of things. Hopefully that didn't jinx it. We are going to, of course, preview the 2023 MLS season for the Whitecaps. A lot has happened. A lot has changed. Want to set the table for that. But to set the table for what we're about to set the table for, a lot of set the table inception there. I'm your co-host, Alexander Gongi-Ruzic, joined, as always, by Samuel Rowan. And Sam, how are we doing this week as we get set for this MLS season?
Yeah, doing really well. As you mentioned, it's always a great week in the lead up, getting excited for the start of MLS action, and great to see the Whitecaps training back at home, kind of all the normal fanfare we would expect for a home opener, and nice that the Whitecaps get back kind of in style. It feels like the proper way to start a season with a home matchup and against a Western Conference rival, against a team where they just acquired a player. So, you know, Sergio Cordova gets to have a revenge game pretty much immediately, which is nice for him, I bet. And yeah, looking forward to diving into that. But on the front end also, as we tend to do when the season comes around, talk a little big picture, making some projections, some predictions, raising some thoughts about the season overall. So we're going to do that on the front end, dive into a little RSL on the back end, and hopefully get you set for Saturday night's action.
This feels like a real season. And you know, I say that because it's not a Whitecaps season if they don't start at home. Let's be real. Like, if you go back genuinely in the past, like last year they started on the road against Columbus. The year before they started on the road against Portland. Well, I guess it was technically at home because it was at RSL, their home at the time. But they played, you know, they weren't at home. I think of like my MLS seasons of the past. I mean, SKC 2020, because that was the last, you know, normal home opener where the Whitecaps started the season. You think back before, like all the years, like remember when they used to play Montreal or Toronto for whatever reason, they just alternate between the two. Every year playing like Sebastian Giovinco's first MLS game was in Vancouver against the Whitecaps or in Josie Altidore's. And, you know, back in the day when they pounded the Red Bulls in 2014 and set the table for a decent little season, it does bring back some good memories. So I just must say, before we start, again, we keep talking about normal. Last year was a normal season, but it does feel like a sense of normalcy in this to have a Whitecaps home game to kick off the season.
Absolutely. I think it just, puts everyone in Vancouver in the right frame of mind. It's just also good to get the connection with that fan base early on, right? I mean, hearing from Vanni Sartini earlier this week, like you think back to big moments from last season, like the Canadian Championship final, and it means so much more when it's at home. So starting out this, you know, really under with Apple TV and, you know, finally kind of emerging from the pandemic, it does feel like a new era of MLS we're entering a little bit. And so it's kind of cool that the Whitecaps get to start that at home. And Alex, with all their signings officially announced, I mean, we're not going to talk too much more about Cordova or about Takaoka, but good to see that all that stuff is official and across the line. So there's nothing really else, you know, in the frying pan. This is the roster they're going to start the season with. Axel Schuster seems pretty confident and content in the group he's put together. You hear both him and Sartini talking over and over again about, well, we like our preparation so much more this year. We're happy with the group this season in a way we weren't before. So now the proof will be in the pudding. You know, how do they come out opening day? Can they get off to a much better start than last season? Would not take much. So I guess, Alex, I mean, I think we'll kind of dive into this topic first, which is the additions they've made this offseason, the incremental improvements to the squad, because there weren't that many bodies that went in or out. But Matias Laborda, Yohei Takaoka, Sergio Cordova, Karifa Yao, we have it written in the notes. Is that enough to make an impact? Is that what this team needed to take a step forward? And I guess this is obviously laced into this question is, you know, what is enough for a Whitecaps supporter? Or what is enough for the ambitions of this team? I would think it's fourth, fifth place in the Western Conference, like a solid playoff spot. But yeah, we'll start there. You know, your thoughts on the additions. Is it going to be enough to take the Whitecaps where they want to go in 2023?
What I find fascinating about this offseason for the Whitecaps, it's pretty quiet. Like, again, it's not like there were signings, you know, coming through. In fact, the fact that there's four seems like a lot. Like, I was like, really? There were four signings? Like, they had that many? Like, it did, felt so quiet that four oversells it. But you realize Yao was, like, what, during the World Cup or even before the World Cup, Laborda was near Christmas, and then Takaoka, Cordova back-to-back. It does make sense. But what's wild, I think, about this Whitecaps offseason is that they finally are heading into regular season, and might this be the most complete roster ever? And again, there's a difference between complete and, you know, being at its best. Like, we'll dive into, okay, is the roster actually good enough? Of course. But there's a reality that for once, it feels like the Whitecaps have a complete roster in the sense that all their DPs are signed. Like, there's no more, oh, there's always a DP spot available. Nope, the DP spots are signed. Their U22 spots are pretty much filled. They have one spot open, technically, I guess, if you count Kyle Alexandre on loan. But even then, like, those spots are filled. Like, you're up against the roster limit. Like, you filled all your spots with depth. Like, you've got your homegrowns in. Like, you're talking in terms of all the methods that the Whitecaps have. They've exhausted it all. This is their version of the complete team. Like, this is them, quote unquote, putting all the chips on the table. And yeah, we can argue, okay, are those chips enough? Are they putting, you know, $5 chips? Are they putting $100 chips in the middle? That's a very much a debate. Like, where do you rate some of these new signings? Where do you rate some of these players? But what I find fascinating about this season, it feels like the first time in forever where you're looking at the squad and it's not like, say last year, okay, you're looking to bring in a number six in the summer, the year before, oh, you're trying to bring in a number 10. It looks at this like your number 10s are there, your number sixes are there, your center backs are there, your striker is there, your wing backs are there, your goalkeeper is there. Like, it's one where there's genuinely like, yeah, of course you can always improve on the squad, but they've done the maximum of what they can. And I think that's fascinating because it's going to be very interesting to see what this final version of this team is, just because you look at every metric of indicating it. This is about to be the peak of their life cycle, or at least what they were preparing to be their peak. Like, this is Axel Schuster's fourth year in charge. This is Vanni Sartini's third season, second full season. Like, this is one where, you know, it's a cycle. Of course, you're always trying to be good right away and be good for a long time. But when you're starting from scratch, like the Whitecaps have, you're always preparing for a point in the cycle where you peak and then you hope to keep success from there. In terms of the cycle, this is about to be the peak. And it's fascinating just to see how good that is. Like, is it going to be a ninth place team and we're disappointed? Or is this going to be, you know, a team that finishes third, second in the West? We don't know. And I think that's what's so fascinating, because it feels like every preseason before you're heading in, you're like, ooh, this is a team that's on the ascendancy maybe. And they just need a piece or two, or the piece or two. Well, all the pieces are in. So we actually finally get to judge the full picture of what this team is and what they've been working on over the last few years.
I really like the way you illustrated that. You know what all of that says to me? No excuses for Axel Schuster. Nope. No excuses for Vanni Sartini. Very much this season, you know, if this group of players is not good enough to get the job done, be fourth or fifth in the West, then we know where to point the finger. So I think that's very interesting. as you mentioned, past seasons, that's all, well, we're waiting on the right profile at this position, or we just haven't been able to make a deal to bring that guy in. And it would have been this way if they hadn't signed Takaoka and they hadn't signed Cordova prior to the season. And it's like, oh, well, we still need a goalkeeper. Oh, we haven't found the striker. But no, they're happy with these targets. They've talked about the fact that these are players they targeted 6 months ago. They'd had on their list for a long time. So they have the roster they want. Now the question is it good enough? And I think that's what's going to make this a really interesting season. What I'm very excited about, Alex, because we've spent so much time in this show, basically since the inception of the third sub, talking about, well, if the Whitecaps were able to get blank, if the Whitecaps were able to do blank, then everything would be different. But there aren't those qualifiers anymore. Like, okay, this looks like a good, well-constructed team. Now, what are the results going to be? So obviously we don't have the answers to whether or not it's good enough, but I think, you know, if everything goes the way Axel Schuster and Vanni Sartini are envisioning it, they're going to be able to accomplish their goals this season. It's just, you know, is what they've created in principle going to work in practice? And that's what's so interesting about sports, because you know, teams on paper are not teams in reality. And that's why we watch the matches, right?
Yeah. Well, I like what you said, actually, no excuses, because that's actually funnily something that I was writing, because we were going through, you know, MLS season previews for the Whitecaps. And, you know, I was looking at Whitecaps, TFC in Montreal, and that's what I wrote for the Whitecaps. I'm like, this feels like the year for no excuses. So I like that you frame that, just because it's like, if you have a slow start, there's no like, oh, our best players are out or this or that, or, you know, your full squad is healthy heading into the season. You've got all your pieces. I like that. No excuses. This is like your time. And I mean, yeah, of course, we've set out that. In terms of the main question, is it enough? I'm going to say for now, I think so. And what I'd say is, for one thing, we do have to give the Whitecaps credit for is that things have trended upwards. It's been relatively consistent in the sense that, yeah, there's been a few step backs along the way, but this is a team that, you know, since Axel Schuster has come in, there has been clear year over year improvement. There's been, okay, this area needs shoring up, we shore up this area, and you feel it. Okay, they finally won a trophy last year. That was the next step of their ascension. For the most part, what we saw last year, like, had they not had that, you know, horrendous goalkeeping statistically, I think it's a year where you would have seen an improvement. You saw an improvement defensively, for example, in the metrics. Okay, they improved their defense finally. They improved their chance creation. They finally have their number 10. And what I like is that there's been a linear progression. Of course, again, there were setbacks. I think there's always going to be setbacks. I think we'll see setbacks this year. But what I've liked is that there's overall been a linear progression. I think it sets things up nicely because, you know, year over year, they have gotten better. And I think they've continued to upgrade positions of need across the board. So, I mean, to answer the question, I think it is enough relative to what they needed. I mean, I think you look across the roster, it's one where you're not looking like, okay, maybe this area needs an upgrade. Maybe this area needs an upgrade. Like, yeah, you can look at the midfield maybe and say, are guys ready? But hey, they're making bets on guys like Alessandro Schopf finding his legs, and at least you'll be comfortable with that and not look at there and be like, there is a hole that needs to be filled. So yeah, I think to answer the question, it has been a good transfer window for the Whitecaps. It has been overall a good progression for the Whitecaps. And now I think ultimately it's just about going out there and seeing it into motion. And for that, I'm fascinated, because one thing that's underrated about this Whitecaps cycle is, by luck, because let's be real, every team plans this, but there's just factors out of your control. They've happened to get this peak that we talk about right in a year where you're in Champions League, right in a year where you can compete in MLS, compete in Canadian Championship. How many times are teams like, you know, say Montreal, like the team last year. Imagine if that Montreal team from the end of the season played in Champions League at the beginning of the season where they weren't ready and they were going through. Like, there's just reality that oftentimes teams get into things like Champions League at the wrong time of their life cycle. So yeah, that's why I'd say, is it enough? Yeah, it's enough, just because, again, like you mentioned, Sam, that was also a big point. Takaoka and Cordova are in now. Many of us maybe feared and saw, okay, they come in the summer when they get that right profile. No, all their signings are in now. So they ticked off all their box. They're ready to go. Like, it has been a good transfer window, and it looks like enough. And it's just one of those where we're left to really wait and see.
And Takaoka with a decent amount of time to get integrated. Cordova coming from Germany mid-season form. So none of those, oh, well, he's going to take a month to get up to fitness and be ready to go, right? So again, you know, building on the no excuse theme. I think that's really, really, a great way of laying it out. And ultimately, I agree with you. I do think that, yeah, their goals are realistic with this group. So we're going to kind of move now to, we have a couple different thought exercises that we're going to go through. And the first of these is floor raisers and ceiling raisers for Vancouver. So who can, the first question is, who can raise this team's floor, right? Who's going to, you know, the problem with the Whitecaps of the past two or three seasons is it felt like when the floor fell out, it really fell out on them and they were getting caved in 4-0. You know, they were permissive defensively. They couldn't create any scoring chances. And it just, things really went off the rails. So if we're looking at the players specifically on this squad who are going to raise that floor, you know, keep the minimum level, the minimum overall performance high, who are those players? And Alex, I know you have one. So I'm going to talk about a couple different guys. And I think when you talk about raising the floor, you often think defensively. I'm going to say Matias Laborda, and in his stead, if injuries do arise, or if, say, someone like Ranko Veselinovic, you know, is not around come late season, if he finds a transfer or something like that, Karifa Yao as well. Because Laborda, I wrote this in a preseason preview, like, he feels like a veteran of this Whitecaps squad already, and he hasn't played a regular season match yet. And I think that just, for defenders, that speaks volumes, right? Like the level of comfort in the squad, the fact that you just don't really notice him that much. He's just sort of in the starting 11, don't have to think about it, and off we go. And the Whitecaps have just, they've not had that over the past couple seasons. They've always had one defender they can rely on, but the other position was a revolving door, or guys were injured, or, you know, someone like Eric Godoy who had the quality but couldn't stay fit. If Laborda could just fill that other role, fill that other center back role, and you don't have to think about it, and he's a young guy with upside, I think that raises the floor of this team in a big way. And then Vanny's been heaping praise on him, so I'm going to give him a shout out as well. Karifa Yao. Vanny's been super impressed with the way he's played, and if you need someone to fill that center of the back three or the more physical, dominating center back role, Yao can come in and do that. And yeah, I think that's great too, that they have some degree of injury cover that they're also confident in. So again, that second, you know, stalwart center back, and then someone in a depth role who can provide reliable minutes with upside as well. I think those are just massive floor raisers for this team.
I'm happy you mentioned Eric Godoy, because that's funny enough what I was thinking about. The way we've seen, what we've seen from Laborda, the way he's been described, like, he seems like what Eric Godoy could be. And of course, again, we'll knock on wood, because Eric Godoy, his first season, for example, he looked really healthy. It was just all of a sudden halfway through, he hit a wall and things fell apart for him. But that's the nice thing about, you know, Laborda. He seems what Eric Godoy could be. And Eric Godoy is very good center back. I mean, I think it's one where for him, it was always health. But yeah, I love this floor raiser question, just because it's like one where, let's be real, like, over the course of a season, some players are going to do well, some players are going to struggle. That's just a season. It's rare where you have 24 players out of 24 all having career seasons. Like, if you do, that's like there's not many precedent of that. Like, that's a season going, a team going out winning the quadruple. Like, there's,
well, I was going to say, you know, like, I think Leicester City, when they won the Premier League, is just everyone was in form at the same time on a team that probably didn't have the overall roster quality to get it done, but it just kind of came together and they had like no squad rotation whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. And even then, it's like, you look at teams like Manchester City and what they spend throwing money at players so that they're like three deep at each position. And even they do not have that issue. Players are always going to ebb and flow. But what I like about this is you can kind of frame it that if all of Vancouver's floor raisers hit, they're a playoff team. Whereas, you know, I think, as we'll get into, the ceiling runs, that's always the exciting one, because, you know, if a guy hits his ceiling, you're talking like Shield. You're like, I think Montreal is a great example of that last year, where a lot of their floor raisers hit, like Kamal Miller, Joel Waterman, you know, Victor Wanyama. They were all quietly excellent. Then you add in like a guy like Ismail Koenig coming in and going supernova, Georgi Mihailovic scoring and assisting, Ramel Kyoto going off. That was the difference between Montreal being a good team and a great team. And I think that's a nice way to frame it for Vancouver. It's because you can have a team where your ceiling raisers hit and your floor raisers don't. That's like what Toronto FC was at the end of last year, where Insigne and Bernadeschi were going supernova. But your defending isn't always there. And the problem is when your floor is not there, you just tend to be volatile. So I think it's important to have good floor raisers. And I think what's great is that you look at Laborda, that's a great one. My other player that I'm adding into this list, I mean, it's a no-brainer, is Andres Cubas. I think he's really the guy that we haven't heard much of him this season. I just feel wild. I think the closest I've seen is that Extra Time rated him as one of their top five defensive midfielders in MLS, which I think it's good to see that, you know, people around MLS are taking notice. But for the most part, even within Vancouver, I haven't heard about him. It's all been about Gold and Vite doing his thing and, you know, the new guys. But Cubas is a guy that we can't forget. Like, when he came in last year, he changed everything. Like, yeah, it's a bit of an exaggeration, but I think of like the second half of the season, the Whitecaps were for the most part going for a back three of, you know, Jevane Brown, Ranko Veselinovic, and, you know, Tristan Blackman. Despite many people having concerns with what that defensive trio looked like, their numbers were really good together. But why? It was because Andres Cubas came in and just gave stability to the team. And I think if you look after his arrival, like, they shot up from a team that was like middle to bottom of XG against, shots against, etc. As soon as he was in there was periods where they're flirting with like borderline top 10 and even cracked the top 10 for a good chunk of the season. Like, that's a big difference, especially when you realize, like, okay, they're adding, you know, a goalie, they're adding all this other stuff around it. That for me signifies a floor raiser, just because the Whitecaps have been so all over the map defensively for years. So to finally have a guy like Cubas who can come in and give them that defensive solidity, that's huge. Because there's the reality that this Whitecaps team is, you know, they've been inconsistent offensively. And I think if they're going to be good defensively, that's huge, because that just buys you time to figure things out offensively. That allows you to work through the patterns. And we've seen it in preseason. It's no coincidence that they've been so good defensively. And then as the preseason wore on, they started to win and win more as their offense started to get goals together. So I think because of that, if Andres Cubas can be healthy and play a lot of games, the Whitecaps will do well just based on the profile that he's brought and from what we've seen from him since he's been brought in. I think having him in the squad is very much going to be the difference between, you know, what they're able to do in many competitions this year.
Yeah, I feel like the Cubas one almost goes without saying. I mean, yeah, it's kind of like Laborda. It's just there, you haven't heard anything from him, but almost in the best way possible, where you just know he's going to come in, provide consistent quality minutes for this team. And just how many players over the last couple of years have you been able to say that about in Vancouver, right? They've been few and far between. So the idea that, you know, as a spine defensively, if they can have Ranko, Matias, Cubas, you know, if those guys start 25 plus matches this season, I feel good about the direction this team is heading in, at least from a floor raising perspective, right? Just that base level of consistency. Okay, now to transition to what you very appropriately labeled as the fun one, right? This is the who's going to blow the top off if everything goes right. You know, if this team isn't fifth or sixth in the West, but they're fighting for MLS, you know, Cup Supporters Shield territory, who's going to go off? And often you'd go with young players on this, but I'm going in a slightly different direction. I think it's the most volatile or the most just kind of on a razor's edge position for this team, because they have players with the quality. It's just a question of, is it all going to come together? So I'm going Alessandro Schopf and Julian Gressel, because you got two guys playing at slightly non-traditional positions. They're both 29 years old. So, you know, are they still on the uptick of their career? Or are they starting to fall off? Obviously, like, if Julian Gressel provides Atlanta United, you know, in what was it? It was 2019 type performance, you know, 6 goals, 11 assists. If he's able to bring that, if Schopf is able to, you know, show as a box-to-box Bundesliga-level midfielder, It's like, okay, this team could be second or third in the West and a real threat. And that's going to, you know, if they're able to be the engine of the midfield all year and not just be adequate, but be, you know, above average to elite MLS midfielders, then like, oh, all of a sudden this team goes from competitive to like a serious threat. I just think it's a huge question mark as to whether or not that's actually going to happen. I have bigger confidence in Julian Gressel than I do in Schopf, but we saw, I feel like, not enough of Schopf last year to really have a great indication. But to me, as much as Pedro Vite, Ryan Gauld, like obviously if they take their games to a different level, that makes a big difference. I feel like the performance ultimately of this team will live and die a little bit with those dual number eights.
I love the way you frame that. I think that's a perfect ceiling raiser example. And like, I love it too, because if you compare, say, the midfield last year at the start of the year, which was what, like, I guess if you look, because there's no Kubas yet. Caio Alexandre wasn't fit. Like, it was what, Russell Tybert, Sebastian Berhalter, and like, what would the third body be like that you throw in there? Like, I'm like, to go from that to potentially like just thinking at what the Whitecaps could be at their peak of Andres Kubas, one of the top number sixes in MLS, Julian Gressel, someone who has consistently performed in MLS and has a history of going off offensively in his best seasons. Even at DC United, he had that season where he snuck in like a tidy 10 assists. And you add in Schopf, like you mentioned, Bundesliga quality. Like, just for me in my head, that is so stark. And I think in a position, for me, I will say it, I will hammer this nail in until I die. Midfield wins games. So if you're telling me that the Whitecaps could have a ceiling like that in midfield, I think that excites me a lot. So I do like the point that you raised in that regard.
I was just going to add, so I went back and checked. Michael Baldissimo at six was the third midfielder in that matchup against the Columbus Crew at the beginning of last season. I think Baldy only survived like 35 minutes or something like that. It didn't last very long.
Yeah, so I mean, hey, that's, if we're talking in terms of the ceiling, and that's a great way to put it. For me to add to that, I guess I would go, I'll go two other names as well. I think for me, another one, I mean, it's a simple one, but I think it's the Whitecaps, again, it feels like their success is going to hinge on goals. Because what I think we saw this preseason, defensively, they've looked good. Last year, believe it or not, whether the numbers, defensively, they looked relatively good. I'll stick by that. You know, I saw the tweets and all the things, all amateur level defending. I thought the defending was relatively fine at times. They're going to be fine. Like, that's not an issue. Where this team is going to go is goals. And I think the one guy that's going to be the big difference maker is Pedro Vite. I just think it's one where even Ryan Gauld, as funny as it is for number 10s, they're typically ceiling raisers. He's a floor raiser just in the sense that he is so consistent. He runs a lot. He's like he'll have boring games where he gets one or two assists. Like, it's one of those where he almost raises your floor the way he plays. Whereas a guy like Pedro Vite, I think he could be the missing piece in the sense, especially just because the Whitecaps are doing a thing that you don't see very often in MLS. Like, how many teams have gone with just two number 10s? Usually we've seen very traditional 4-2-3-1, you let your number 10, you know, just do its thing in the middle. You have your number 9, you have your wingers running off. Like, there's not many teams that are going, screw it, let's double down. Let's go two number 10s. Because what's better than one number 10? Why about two? And I just think that is fascinating to me tactically, what that could look like. And I think a guy like Vite, he just has such explosive potential. I think what's nice with Gauld is that you can earmark him in for like 8 goals, 8 assists next year. Almost like just because he's that consistent, whereas a guy like Vite, he just has potential where you could tell me he has an 11 goal season, I'd be like, okay, like that, I could actually see him doing that. Or you could tell me he has a 12 assist season just because he has that mercurial, he has that quality about him that you saw at Independiente and you saw in flashes last year. Like, when he's on, he can really be a difference maker. And I think that's huge, because for the Whitecaps team to do well, they're going to need some young players to step up. And I think if Vite can go off and just be a good dual threat, like that will be a big difference maker, especially because that takes a bit of load off Gold. Like people are gonna have to focus on Vite. That gives Gold a little more space in midfield. Teams are gonna have to restructure themselves defensively. They'll have 1-6 and he's trying to chase around Vite and Gold. That creates matchup problems. That frees up space for what my other ceiling raiser is. Again, it's an easy one. I'm gonna go Sergio Cordova just because I think it's one where the Whitecaps, if they can get a number 9 who can just get, you know, a good amount of goals, it's, again, it goes without saying, but it's one where the last few years it's been a bit all over the place. We saw Brian White, what he was able to do in his half season. If the Whitecaps can get a half season like that over a full season, my goodness, especially now that this isn't a striker where you're looking, okay, who is going to feed them the ball? Like Sergio Cordova has Pedro Vite and Ryan Gold feeding him the ball. Chances should not be an issue. So if he can hit good on the potential that we've seen, the flashes that we could see, this is someone who, you know, again, should easily crack double digits and maybe push for more. And I think if he can do that, it's one where that will make a huge difference. So, I mean, it's two very easy answers, your striker and your number 10. But I think it's one where for the Whitecaps, if they're going to be defensively solid, having goals and assists flood in from those avenues will make a big difference, especially because you know what you're going to get from Ryan Gold. You know what you're going to get from, you know, the other players. But I think Vite and Cordova could be the real difference between, okay, if they are adding in goals on top of that, whole different scenario.
It's funny because, so this is the one that maybe we like slightly disagree on. I was almost going to say, I feel like Cordova might be maybe I'm underselling Cordova's potential, but I feel like Cordova might be a floor raiser just in the sense that, like, I feel relatively confident you're going to get 10 goals out of him this season. Like, I think you can rely on that. And so that feels like there's a good baseline there. But I don't know, remains to be seen. In terms of Pedro Vite, this might be a bit of hyperbole, but I genuinely feel like Vite by the end of this season could be like a top 15, top 20 player in MLS, or he could regress.
He has the potential.
Or he could regress from last season. Like, we don't know. It's really, Vite's potential is unlimited, and it just depends on, does he fit, you know, does he fit into the right scenario? Does he continue to feel comfortable in Vancouver? Like, how does he gel and, you know, in this new shape as it continues into year two? Like, we just don't know. So he's like the ultimate ceiling raiser guy. You just, you know, he could take you to the moon, but you just don't know how far it's going to go.
Yeah, no, I think 100% with Vita. I mean, to Caicedo's point, you're right in the sense that, yeah, on RSL team last year.
You mean Cordova, right?
Yes, Cordova. Pardon me. The Cordova Caicedo. I mean, some reason I've been fighting with that internally. We'll get over that. Time. But with Cordova, pardon me, it's going to be one where, yeah, he scored 9 goals on a, like, yeah, people look at that. It's not that inspiring. Like, RSL's attacking numbers last year, you have to understand, were like abhorrent. Like, it was one where I think we'll get into the RSL preview later on, but like Sam was looking at it, it's like Cordova had like 10 XG and 9 goals and led the team in both categories. The next top scorer I think was someone like 4 or 5 goals, and the next best XG was 4x, like XG, like he was carrying. So that, I just say ceiling raiser in the sense that, yeah, he's probably going to get his goals, but it's one where we haven't really, like, if you look at his numbers, like, he only has 20 goals in 120 pro appearances. It's reality that he hasn't scored a whole lot at a bunch of levels. And you do wonder, okay, has that been because he hasn't been always at the greatest teams? Like, even you go to the Bundesliga, he's playing for Arminia Bielefeld. He's playing for, you know, a Leverkusen team where he wasn't playing that much. It's one where now he has a team where it's built around a player like of his style. He has 2 number 10s feeding him, not just 1, 2 number 10s. Where at RSL, he didn't have a single number 10 because Demir Krylak was injured for most of the year. Like, it's one where if he can hit, it's one where I think the potential, like, we're talking, like, as wild as it might be to suggest for a Whitecap striker, like 20 goals. Like, I don't know. It just feels strange to throw out there, but it's one where if all goes well, like, I'm just saying, if all goes well, like, it's one where we could be talking 20 goals. And if he's hitting that mark, like, the Whitecaps are going to be in a very, very, very good position.
All right, you got me convinced. I'm psyched and ready for a 20 goal season. I feel like from what I saw from him at RSL last year, I'm confident that he'll hit that minimum benchmark. So it's more of a compliment than anything. Okay, we're going to go to our second sort of compare and contrast scenarios here, And this is best case scenario, worst case scenario for this Whitecaps team, with the caveat of being realistic. We're not going to say, you know, Ryan Gauld has 20 goals and 20 assists and they win MLS Cup with all clean sheets in the playoffs. Like, we're not going that far, but within the realm of realism, Alex, what do you think the best case scenario is for this team? If everything goes right, you know, where do they wind up at the end of 2023?
Yeah. And I mean, it's a great question, but I think it's one where you look at the roster, you look at where they are. I think at the very least, this is a top four team in the West. And I have to get used to saying, like, ooh, this is a team that gets a home playoff game, because everyone gets a home playoff game, and we'll have to get to that new playoff format now where they just went full, like, everyone gets a home playoff game and whatnot. But this is a team that can get a top four in the West, I think, almost comfortably, I dare say, based on just where they upgraded, if all goes right. Like, if Takaoka is the guy in goal, I think he's the big one. Because again, we're talking at the bare minimum. If he comes in his average, that's an 11 goal swing. Like, I'm just like, again, it's one of those where I'll stress it until the cows come home, as they say. But it's one where, like, a 11 goal spread on its own is massive. Like, for perspective, the Whitecaps had their minus 17 goal difference. Like, it's, if they pushed up to zero, like, that's them pushing, like, they're pushing teams who are in fifth, fourth last year. Like, you know, because Minnesota and RSL made it with, both made it in the playoffs with a negative goal difference. Like, that's huge. And then you add in the goals that Cordova can bring. Hopefully he can just be available, because as you always say, Sam, sometimes the best ability is availability. And I think that's the Whitecaps are banking with Cordova versus Cavallini, that he will be available and him and White can get some magic. You look at that. You look at the fact they have Vitae and Gauld. You look at the midfield. I think this is a team that comfortably should be able to shoot for fourth place in the West, or top four. Sorry, not fourth place. Top four in the West. I think Cordova gets 15 goals in this scenario. I think Gauld has a 7+7 season. I think Vitae at least clears the 5-5 mark. I think you get surprise contributions from Gressel. I think Christian Dahomey pinches in off the bench. Brian White manages to get 5 goals off the bench. Defensively, you hold your standard. Maybe you push up to a plus 10, plus 20 goal differential. And I think in the playoff, you win a round. I think it's one where you at least make that final four, so to speak. Like, you win that first round of 8, it is, and you make the final four of your conference and at least show that. I think that is a realistic ceiling for the Whitecaps. And I think it's one from there. That's good, because if you're making the top four, it's one where it's single elimination from there and it's a crapshoot. You never know how far you can make it. And if you make top four in the regular season, you're setting it up that single elimination game is potentially at home, which is always a nice possibility to consider in those sorts of matches.
Okay, so that was pretty comprehensive. So I'm going to pick up the scraps from that. So I really echo everything you said. Top four, you know, all your main contributors having good seasons. You can certainly see how that's possible, especially if everyone stays fit. But a couple things, you know, on top of that, in the realistic dream season, you win the Canadian Championship for a second season in a row. You make, I don't want to say a, like, you know, not making a Seattle Sounders run in CONCACAF Champions League, but you're winning a couple rounds. You're making some noise as well. So, you know, success in those three competitions, just being able to manage those at a high level, I think, would be a big feat as well. And then I'll add some, you know, if everything's going to go right for this team in a realistic sense, a couple guys, you know, we'd like to see Ryan Raposo continue his upward trend as an MLS player. We'd like to see Ali Ahmed come in and prove that some of the preseason flash in Spain wasn't just a flash in the pan. Like to see Seb Berhalter take a step forward. Heck, maybe we see a Lowell Wright, you know, some of the MLS Next guys have a couple nice performances. I think those are things, you know, if it's all going really well, to watch out for as well. I mean, I'll throw this in as well. Like to see the MLS Next Pro team have success, play some winning football. They started off last season pretty strong, but have struggled since. We talked about in the last show, you know, see Cam Habibula, Antoine Couplan develop some of those guys at the next level. So, yeah, that's best case scenario. I think, you know, win a playoff round, win the Canadian Championship, make some noise in Champions League, and then also just, you know, building that holistic club mentality where it's not just about your first team players, your elite first team players, but you feel confident at the development stage. You feel like you have fringe contributors. You know, Vanny does a good job coaching the team, managing the squad, all these kinds of things. I mean, even heck, you go beyond that, like, does Axel Schuster make some shrewd moves in the summer, in the offseason following 2023? I think, you know, that holistic picture is what they're pushing for, and winning football obviously makes that job a heck of a lot easier. Like, if they're able to accomplish all these idealistic things, then it just, everything starts to fall into place a little bit more. So that's the best case scenario, but now we're about
I'll hop in.
Yeah, worst case. I'll hop in to finish. Shortly. So that's enough of the positivity, the almost.
Almost. I'll finish also with the best case. I think that what I like about all this, which is, again, a fair prediction, we're not saying they go out when it's Supporters Shield, which is possible, but what's nice is that you look at this team, there's at least a two-year window. Like, you look at some other teams that compete, it's not like the Union last year, which, hey, their academy is so good, they're going to be great this year, don't get me wrong. But the Union were so good and so young that you're looking like, okay, you're losing a bunch of guys. What's nice that if all of this hits, what's going to change for next year? Like, maybe Ranko Veselinovic goes because he's been here for a while. And maybe Pedro Vite goes if he goes supernova because he has that potential. Like, Ryan Gold's not going to go anywhere. Andres Kubas isn't going to go anywhere. Julian Gressel maybe leaves, but even, like, I doubt it. Like, you know, Schopf as well, just his first season, he'll be around. You know, you're not losing Cordova after 1 year unless he scores 35 goals or goes ridiculous. Like, most of these guys will still be around is what I'm saying. This isn't one where you're looking like, okay, there's an 18-year-old kid going to start. He goes off. He's gone to, you know, he's going to be playing in the Premier League next year, like an Ismail Kone over in Montreal kind of vibe. So I do like that if they have a season like this, there's actually a chance that unless things go severely south, like, they've done a good job of signing a lot of these guys to longer-term deals, they can build off this. And I just found that interesting that if you look, it's something where it's like, this isn't like a chance for a flash in the pan. Like, it's something, if they do well this year, there's a lot of the same ingredients. Like, Takoka as well, in his prime, just signed. Like, I like that a lot of those guys, there's no like last dance feel about this. It's more like a start of something. And I think that'll be huge because you talk about the holistic part. What's great is maybe Vite leaves, Cameron Habibula finally takes that step up and he comes in 2024, and you're talking about those sorts of things falling into place. So
that's a terrific point, because, you know, I think everything you just said, Axel Schuster would probably nod his head and say, yeah, that's by design. This is the intent of this squad, right? They didn't maybe go after, you know, six or seven 19-year-olds with big potential because you know that either that's likely not to work out, or if they do hit, you're going to be selling them that very next season. So they built a roster, I think we've talked about this before, kind of designed to compete the next 2 to 3 seasons, and the age, the profile, the life and career situation really reflects that. So I think that's a great point. And yeah, it makes you excited if, maybe not if everything we just discussed doesn't necessarily go right, but they're pushing towards that, it gives you a reason to be encouraged that next season, 2024, they might be able to build on whatever they're able to create this season. But all of that being said, now we're going to flip it around. Again, realistic realm of possibility, but if things go poorly, if things do not go to plan, where does this team end up at the end of 2023, you know, where's the seller for this Whitecaps team?
Yeah, and that's the fun question on the other side. Like, you, we talked about all these great things happening. On the flip side, I think it's one where it's yeah. I mean, I was gonna say earlier, a week ago, we're doing this, I'd say miss the playoffs. Now with 9 teams making the playoffs, I don't know if their worst case is bad enough that they missed the playoffs. But I think it's one where they're in an absolute dogfight between somewhere between 11 and 8. I do think this roster, even at its worst case, isn't bad enough when we're talking about them bottoming out. To be realistic, I think it's one where even if some injuries happen, if guys struggle, I do still think there's enough there for them to at least be in that 11 to 8 range. So that's like very much on the cusp of the playoffs. But I think there's a few question marks, such as, first of all, what if Cordova's not their guy? Like, it is still their third choice option. Obviously, they loved Ty Baribeau and they weren't able to get that over the line. How much, you know, them prioritizing Baribeau versus Cordova? Like, is Cordova really going to be their guy and get those goals they need? Because I think, you know, if they're going to do well, it usually starts with your number nine getting a bunch of goals. It's rare that teams don't do well without that. I think another one is Takaoka, just because, yeah, I think it's one where the J-League is massively slept on, and I'll tell that to anyone who listens, but it's one where there's reality that foreign keepers have been a very mixed bag over the last, you know, few years. Even guys like Andre Blake, he came through the draft. There's been too many histories of, you know, guys think of Vermeer, Kenneth Vermeer, and the path he played at LAFC in Cincinnati, and some of the other foreign keepers that have come in and have struggled to have success. The reality is a lot of the best keepers have been your Sean Johnsons, your Max Crepeaus, you know, Andre Blake, of course, who in my mind is pretty much a domestic, given how long he's been here and that he came through the college system. You know, whereas a guy like Takaoka, he's coming from a new league, you know, he's coming to a physical league where as a short keeper, he might be targeted. They might, you know, be physical on him on corners, et cetera, et cetera. It's something where it's just, he might not adjust as quick as hoped. And if the Whitecaps have any sort of goalkeeping issues, again, as we saw, it doesn't matter how well you defend, if, you know, you're always going to struggle in that regard. And then from there, I think there's a reality that, you know, depth options in certain areas, the Whitecaps will always deal with injuries. So there's always a realistic possibility you lose some of your players for a few months. And if that position happens to be like center back or in the midfield, all of a sudden things go downwards really quick in terms of quality. And I mean, I suppose that's an MLS thing, so it's not unique to the Whitecaps, but it is, you know, something worth noting, especially in the few positions where, you know, there is a significant drop off by no fault of the player's own. And I think because of that, it's one where MLS could go the way I described. Another thing to worry about is the lack of Canadians. And I say that because that's huge for CanChamp in particular, because I think in MLS, let's be real, the fans, and understandably so, don't care who's playing as long as you win. Like, that's just the reality. Like, if you're telling me, if someone came up to you and said, Whitecaps are going to win MLS Cup, CONCACAF Champions League, and Leagues Cup, and Canadian Championship, they're going to win the Quad this year, but they're not going to play a single Canadian minute, I think 80% of the Caps fans are like, okay, good, like, fine, like, that's, we'll take that. Like, but it's one where it does have its ramifications long term, and it has ramifications on the Canadian Championship. You have to start three Canadians. The Whitecaps shouldn't have that problem. Like, between Karifa Yao, Thomas Assal, Christian Gutierrez, if he's around and healthy, Russell Tybert, of course, he's still around. Even a guy like Cameron Habibula, you can throw him in if Ryan Gold is alongside him or one of the young strikers. That's not a problem. But the reality is TFC and Montreal, for example, the two other favorites, Montreal has three 10 MNT internationals they can trot out there. Like Kamal Miller, Joel Waterman, James Pantemis, boom. You're not sacrificing international quality. You look at TFC, they have Jean-Marc Anthony Kay, Jonathan Osorio, and, you know, and they can throw in like Richie Larea if he's still around, or if not, Lucas McNaughton. Like, they're not losing quality, whereas the Whitecaps' best 11 is so concentrated in internationals that could hurt them in CanChamp, where they want to play their best 11, but they're, you know, them not integrating Canadians as much into their best 11, that, you know, that could be quality, especially a guy like Gutierrez, quality player. But if he hasn't played much, say through the first half of the season, you come up like June, July, whenever the final is, and you need a Canadian, you're throwing him in and he hasn't played much. That's always going to be a downgrade, even if he's a quality player, to not have that Canadian regularly embedded in your roster. So I do also think that is something that could be hurt. And, you know, from there, Champions League, Leagues Cup, Caps have always struggled with, you know, Liga MX opposition. From there, I think that one kind of explains itself. They just struggle there and don't go very far in either of those tournaments.
Yeah, I think that's well laid out. I mean, to me, obviously injuries is like the first thing that comes up, right? And to me, like, season-ending injury for Andres Kubas would be, that's the biggest blow I think you could face as a team. I don't know, Alex, if you were going to, you look like you had thoughts there, but maybe you're just agreeing.
I mean, all I was going to say, to be fair, I think you could say that about like 95% of the DPs in MLS. Like, their DPs, yeah, they're significantly better than the rest of the team. But I'd argue, but again,
I think this, like, team could survive without Ryan Gold, strangely enough, because you've actually got a lot of attacking midfield types that could come in. And yes, they're not going to provide Ryan Gold level minutes, but you have similar profiles. Whereas I feel like if you lose Kubas, you don't really have anyone to fill that role at even close to that level. As much as I'm the biggest Seb Berhalter fan, probably of Whitecaps people out there, but still, it's just the drop-off would be massive.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you wholeheartedly, but it's one where, I mean, you'd say that about most teams. Like, you look at their DP, like, you're taking them out. I'd say the bigger concern is, like, say midfield, the drop-off between your non-DP guys from, like, Gressel and Schopf to guys like, you know, Berhalter and Tiber, that could be enough where that, I think that's one where you'd almost, I mean, that's out of your control almost, but you'd want that guy's pushing up, and maybe you would want a youngster in the academy who's on the cusp of pushing up to be in that depth role versus guys like Berhalter and Tiber, who I think Berhalter in particular, like, we know what he is, but it's not one where his ceiling is incrementally, you know, it's not one where there's this potential of an 18-19 where you're like, okay, he could step up, provide you depth on the cheap. And I think that's one thing that good MLS teams have shown. Again, we'll regurgitate all the same options like Philadelphia, Montreal. But again, it helps that a guy like Kone comes in at 19 and he's able to provide you what guys were in that were paid a lot more than him were able to, because he's got that potential. You look at Philadelphia, they're constantly bringing in those sorts of players. I do think for depth, you want your academy to be your depth just because they have that potential and they have that youth. And the fact that the only academy guy, really, I guess, that's depth on this current first team roster is what, like Ali Ahmed? Because realistically, guys like Cameron Abiboul are more on the second team focus right now. I do think that is a bit of a worry, because you'd want your depth to have a certain ceiling in MLS.
Yeah, so I mean, just back to worst case scenario, as you mentioned, Takaoka, I mean, it's his first time playing in a professional league outside of Japan. So like, there could be culture shock, there could be an adjustment period. If that doesn't go well, if Thomas Osal getting sort of inconsistent minutes leads to him not taking a step forward, Cordova doesn't integrate, I think, you know, for all the reasons that I said, that Alessandro Schopf and Julian Gressel could be massive ceiling raisers, it could also not work out in the midfield for those two. Like, if Schopf is past his best physically, if Julian Gressel playing centrally doesn't allow him to do what he does best, which is, you know, creating with service from wide areas, and this team is stagnant again offensively, I can see how that would be a problem. And really, I mean, defensively, I think they'll be good. The only injuries is just what could, injuries and bad goalkeeping could tank that. And then, as you mentioned, I mean, getting, you know, if they have to put a bunch of Canadians they don't want to put in the Canadian Championship and you get bounced by a CPL team, that would be bad. And then just Champions League, Leagues Cup, getting tossed right away, you know, could go from a very inspiring season to an uninspiring one. But as you said, I mean, MLS league performance is kind of the ultimate metric. And I do think that 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, that feels like their floor. I mean, if you ask the MLS and air quotes experts, not everyone believes that. But I mean, even just looking at a roster like RSL previewing this upcoming matchup, like, the Whitecaps are a well-constructed team. So I think that, you know, even if they have a lot of problems, Vanni Sartini doesn't do a good job managing the team. You know, we get more Christian Dahomey at fullback situations, where players are performing at far less than their potential. If they have to sell a couple players mid-season because they demand a move, I still think, you know, 10th or 11th might be as deep as this team falls, which is encouraging, but obviously you don't want to see that happening. And I think in all likelihood, you know, we're going to fall somewhere in between these two suggestions. And that seems like a good thing, because it means we're going to get, hopefully, some playoff soccer and overall an entertaining season.
Yeah, that's it. I think what's good is a lot of what we mentioned, like floors and middle ground and all that, it just feels like bare minimum, this should be a team pushing for the playoffs. This isn't a team where you're hoping for, like, what's nice, I think, is that you're not hoping for the moon to move for the Whitecaps to do well. I think it's a lot of realistic asks, such as Cordova finds double-digit goals, such as Ryan Gold plays at the level he could play at. It's Endres Kubas just does what he does last year. You know, there's a lot of like realistic expectations in there. Heck, Takaoka comes in, provides league average goalkeeping. What I like is no one's been asking him to come in and go win the Golden Glove in the first year. Like, it's been a lot of just be league average. And I think a lot of that, it's nice, because it's like in other scenarios, you'd be like, look, we need this 18-year-old kid to play out of his skin. You need this, you know, DP10 that you've never heard of to go off. Like, it's nice that there's a lot of factors that are both not that unrealistic that we've seen before. Like, again, Cordova scoring double digits. He scored 9 on a terrible RSL team offensively. Like, guys like, you know, Gald, we know what he can do. Kubas, we know what he can do. Takaoka, like, there's pedigree. I like that the bets that are being made, there aren't like 1 to 100 bets. They're 1 to 4 bets. And that is nice in the sense that it offers you a little more optimism in terms of where they could actually end up if all goes right, because it basically, to say, it all feels like there's a possibility of going right. It's not, again, you're not hoping for miracles. You're not hoping for things out of your control. But I guess lastly, in our preview section before we get to predictions, Vanni Sartini. We talked about Axel Schuster. We talked about the squad. But of course, there's one guy who takes the squad and goes and makes the most of it. Vanni Sartini, now in his second full year, third season as coach. I mean, it certainly feels like it's make or break time for Vanni Sartini, given the roster he has. Like, it's one, as a coach, can't really complain. You've got a very strong starting 11. You've got all your DPs. You've got your depth. Like, in terms of a coach like Vanny, I think this is everything that he can ask for. So, I mean, I guess, Sam, maybe to start, to steer the conversation, like, how are you feeling about Vanni Sartini heading into this year? And, like, what would be a good year for Vanni Sartini? Like, what would be a year that would see him keep his job and you'd be happy with Vanni Sartini heading into 2024?
I think with Vanny, I always start with this, right? That he's someone who likes to learn. And I think even chatting with him this week, you get the impression that he's looked back at last year and reflected on, oh, these are some things I should have done differently. These are, you know, things I've been trying to revive and improve my process and, you know, tweaking the coaching staff. He talked about actually a small coaching staff being a little bit better because you're less specialized. You have a more general understanding of the team. You know, all this stuff, I think, is positive. I think Vanny's learning how to be a head coach in MLS and improving year by year. So I think for him, it's just like continuing to see that progression, right? Where I do feel like at times last season, there was the partial season where his ideas were so kooky and out there that they sort of threw other teams off and it just worked. And then last season, sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. Sometimes it looked like he just got out game planned. And I think this season we'll see more balance. Like, honestly, I think success for Vanny this season is if he just sort of, as much as he can, gets out of the way and lets the squad do what the squad does best, because they have the quality players to make it happen. It's just kind of very subtly putting them in a position to succeed. So I think as long as coaching doesn't become an unnecessary focus for this side, Sartini certainly has the charisma, the leadership characteristics, all the intangibles to be a great leader. It's just, you don't want to make the tactics a distraction. And I think he's more than capable of doing that. I think he's realized how to maybe like calm and center his overall, you know, sort of aura as a manager, both emotionally and tactically. And so, yeah, I think as long as it doesn't become a problem, he'll keep the job. And if not, we've talked about this before, where I feel like Vanni Sartini is going to be part of this organization in some capacity. It's just a question of, is he still the right guy to be the head coach? But I think if I had to predict it right now, I think Vanni Sartini will still be the manager of this team in 2024.
No, honestly, it'd be foolish to get rid of him in the organization. I think it's someone you want around long term, but it's going to be one where, of course, you manage the time when the time is right. You, of course, want to go about things well so that you can keep him around, so he doesn't go elsewhere, especially, you know, in terms of the methodological, if that's even a word, side of things. But in terms of Vanny, yeah, I think it's one where this year, I mean, we talked about it at the top, no excuses. I think that's going to be the big one. Like, it's one where things are set up for him. What's nice is that it's very clear starting 11. It's very clear what his team is going to be. So it's not like the first year he's coming in and having to reinvent the wheel. Like, oh, I want to play a 3 at the back. I'm going to reinvent everyone as a wing back. You're this now. You're playing new positions. Like, that's all that's out the window. You've had your style. You've been clear with, you know, Axel Schuster. You've got players. You can play specific roles. You know, that all of that's out of the way. So now it's just one where just get the most out of your best players. don't overthink the wheel. I think one thing that Vanni Sartini's gonna have to be careful about is that, as you know, people view him as like a rah-rah manager. I don't think that's fair, because as we see, he's very sharp tactically. Like, it's one where people outside just say, oh, he's just a great motivator, he's a talker, he's a charismatic guy. Like, that's far from the truth, in the sense that we've seen what he has tactically. But it's one where, because of that, if things go south in Vancouver, you know, to start the year, people are gonna be like, oh, look, like, Vancouver's struggling just because they have a rah-rah manager, doesn't know how to put tactics together. And I think for him, it's going to be important to have a strong start and really get momentum and not overthink things. And you know, since he has his starting 11 so set out, I think this is going to be a chance for him to shine, because with your 11 so set in stone, you can really experiment within the 11. You can see tactical wrinkles within games. You can see guys drop into certain positions, certain overlapping runs, certain build-up phases in possession, without getting too experimental with, okay, I want to play a certain way, so let me just drop in this player out of nowhere into a new position he's never played. So as long as he strikes a balance between, you know, being the guy that we know tactically that can experiment, that can play up, you know, and do that sort of thing. And I think the big key for him is, if he can keep the depth players happy, as he's so far done a good job of, that could be an extra bonus for him, because one tough thing for him as a coach is that he has four competitions to deal with. So if he can get the most out of his depth as well, I think that's going to be a huge plus for him. But yeah, certainly a big year, because third year, it feels like one where, especially given the squad the Whitecaps have, if Vanny struggles this year, he's going to be a very easy piece to let go. Why? Well, we mentioned at the start of the year, this Whitecaps team is finally at their peak, and their peak looks to be one where it's 1, 2, 3 seasons. Well, if they're still going to be a team that's going to have most of their roster next year, they're going to be in their peak. It's very easy just to bring in a new coach to look at things and say, let him or her, them go at it and be that coach. So it's one where, for Vanni Sartini, he's one where he'd be very expendable if he has a bad season.
Yeah, it's one of those things where they're pot committed to this general roster at this point. So the easiest variable to change would be Vanni Sartini if things don't work out. And that's why I kind of framed it in terms of, like, if Vanni just lets his squad be his squad and it doesn't become, you know, a sideshow or interference, if he's just able, like, as you said, not crazy tactics, just sort of subtle game plan specific tactical wrinkles within matches, I think that'll be the real recipe for success for this team. Okay, Alex, we talked about best case, worst sit case, raising the floor, raising the ceiling. Now we're going to dive into some reasonably rapid fire predictions. Not what we think might happen in hypothetical scenarios, but what we actually think is going to happen in 2023. So, I mean, we'll just kick it off. MLS standings, you know, where do you think this team ends up at season's end? Alex, I've gone with 6th in the West. I just think the West is competitive. Look at teams like Sporting KC and Seattle, who were well out of the playoffs last season, but, you know, certainly everyone is expecting to be factors again. I mean, even a team like RSL, you got someone like Dimir Krylak back from injury. Lots of teams on the rise. I just think it's going to be hyper competitive. And yeah, so 6 is that. That maybe sounds pessimistic, but I think it's going to be a very impressive, entertaining season where they end up 6 and they're in the playoffs with the chance of beating anyone. But yeah, there might be some growing pains, some ups and downs along the way. So that's my MLS regular season standings prediction.
Yeah, I'm going to go 4th. I mean, yeah, it's maybe more on the upper end of what we suggested best case scenario, but I just think it's one where, again, the asks that are out there of this team, I just don't think are that unrealistic. Again, like Cordova getting double digit goals, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm just going to go 4th. It's one where the West, yeah, it's very competitive, but it's one where the Whitecaps actually have a bit of stability amongst teams in the West. You look at what, you know, Seattle, for example, is battling through after the Club World Cup and just what that did to their season. And you look at some of the other regular contenders, they also have a lot of questions, where it feels like the Whitecaps for once are relatively stable in a lot of areas. And I think, you know, stability does help a lot sometimes in MLS predictions in such a volatile league. So I'll go 4th with that one. I've been sticking with that one, and I'll stick with that one here.
Nice. I like the optimism. Okay, Canadian Championship. We've talked about the draw already. I mean, we've probably alluded to some of the roster changes with TFC and CF Montreal. Overall, it feels like Montreal, you know, is taking a massive hit to their roster. TFC, I still have some pretty big question marks about the way that roster's construction, that roster is constructed. And then you look at the Whitecaps draw. They have a lot of advantages. It's set up for them to succeed. So I'm going to say that they run it back and win the Canadian Championship for a second straight season.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to that. I think I also would say they run it back and win, just because it's one right. What's nice about this is how it's set up, because they get the bye. So that allows them to focus on Champions League early on and not get too bogged down with stuff. And then their first game either is away to York, which, to be fair, is a tough draw, because York looks really good in terms of the signings, but still one you'd expect to win. If not, it's at home against Vancouver FC, an expansion team. You'd expect them to win that. And then you go to the semis. Yeah, it's going to be tough if it's Pacific or, you know, Cavalry, but and it's on the road. But hey, they beat Cavalry on the road last year with a lesser roster. And, you know, yeah, they lost to Pacific 4-3 in the famed, the Ferry side now, as it's now known. And it's not going to be easy, but I think it's one where this team is good enough to avoid that. And then once you make it to the final, I think it's one where, just at home against Montreal and Toronto, they always typically do well at home. And I think it's one where, if they're on the road, given what we know and how, you know, the Canadian situation, it's one where I would have bet maybe on Montreal or Toronto. But the fact that they've had the chance to draw the final at home, I think if they make it that far, they should be able to see things over the line, just because they're so good at home. Like, it's one where no matter what the roster's been, other than that weird blip in like 2019 it was, where they forgot to win at home, this is reality. Like, over the last 6 years, they've been really good at home. I think, I bet you, if you run up the averages, like, they consistently have been one of the better teams in MLS at home over the last like half decade. So as simple as it is, because of that, I'd say they win the Can Champ.
Okay, now on to Champions League. Alex, I just want to ask preemptively here, who would potential matchups be for the Whitecaps if they beat Real España in the first round?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, once they get through, should they get through Real España, they get Alajuelense of Costa Rica, or they get LAFC. So no Mexican teams, which is always a bogey team for Whitecaps. And I mean, Alajuelense, tough team. They consistently, you know, tough Costa Rican outfit to crack. LAFC always tough as well, but they did also go through some turnover. So, I mean, tough matchups either way, but yeah.
I'm going to say, I don't know why, I just have a weird feeling about this. I'm going to say that the Champions League is maybe the one out of three competitions that falls a little bit by the wayside, and they beat Real España in the first round, but then they don't proceed any further than that. So they'll get two rounds of CONCACAF Champions League play. It'll be tight, but I just feel like ultimately the MLS competition and the Canadian Championship, like, I feel like Vanni Sartini puts a real emphasis on the Canadian Championship, and maybe this is one where they get bounced by an MLS side, and that's as far as it goes.
Yeah, I mean, that's very fair. On the flip side, I do think Caps are going to take this very seriously. I mean, Axel Schuster since 2019 has been like Champions League, Champions League, Champions League. Like, he's obviously, as a European, he has that fixation. And what is nice, that because the Whitecaps have a bye in the first round of the Can Champ, that means their Can Champ journey doesn't start till May, if I'm not mistaken. And because of that, like, the Champions League is already going to be done pretty early, because it's like Express this year or something. Like, it's one where the rounds are going to go very quick. Like, yeah, the final, the semifinals are already at the end of April. Like, it's one where it's going to be a very accelerated timeline. So I think because of that, the Whitecaps are going to focus on Champions League at the beginning of the year. And I say they make the semifinals, and I think they fall short there. I just think it's one where they beat Real España. Yeah, it's a tall ask to ask them to beat an LAFC team that they've struggled with. But for whatever reason, in the past two editions, they went into Champions League, they did well against other MLS teams. I think they keep it up, but I just think in the semifinals, they run into like an Atlas, or they run into a Philadelphia Union, and their magic maybe runs out there as things really start to get congested, because I think the second leg of the semi would be around when their Canadian Championship journey starts, and then things start to get a little mixed up.
Okay, on to the next one. I got to be honest, I have very limited thoughts about Leagues Cup, other than the Whitecaps don't really play well against Liga MX teams. And I just think it's kind of a silly competition anyway. So I'm going to say that they don't make much noise in the League's Cup.
Bold prediction. Very bold prediction. I mean, for me, it's one where I look at their group and they've got Galaxy and Lyon, and only the top two teams of three make it. I think it's one based on what we know in the past, which is they somehow qualified out of their group at MLS's back despite all odds. I think they make it out of their group and everyone's happy, and then they lose in the first round, whatever the first round is, round of 16, round of 32. So I think it's one where they tease and they, you know, draw Lyon, beat Galaxy, and you're like, oh, okay, they're going to go on a run, and then they just lose in the round of 16 because, yeah, or it is the round of 32. So yeah, they lose in the round of 32.
Okay, well, now we're going to move from those are the competitions. We're going to move to some metrics. We talked about it already. Negative 17 goal differential last season, obviously way, way, way in the red. But some factors like goalkeeping, like some blowout losses that really, tilted the scales in one direction. So what are we thinking in terms of predictions for goal difference in 2023? I'm going to say pretty much dead even. I think they're going to be like plus one or plus two, maybe, you know, maybe plus five. Ultimately, I think that they're going to score more goals, but I don't expect this to just be like an offensive spree. I think they're going to be a good defensive team that finds a way to be a little bit more creative than they are last season, but ultimately still quite structured. So I'm going to say, you know, between zero and plus five in terms of the goal difference.
Yeah, I'm going to go plus 11, a little higher again, but I think it's one where what really hurt their goal differential last year is as they had these habits of letting blowout games happen. I just think you look at the team now, like there shouldn't be any more 4-3 nils. So even if they, you know, struggle, I think there's going to be a lot of 0-0, 1-0 games where they're not tanking their goal difference. So because of that, I think plus 11, because again, when you look at this team, as they showed in the second half, this is also a team that has 3-4 goal potential in them finally in game. So hopefully they can be on the other end of blowouts. That's why I have plus 11.
I'm sensing a theme here in terms of the predictions. I'm feeling like a little bit of a negative Nelly, but nonetheless, okay, we're on to some player-based predictions now. So a little more difficult to be negative with this one. And the first of those is unsung player. Or surprise performer, you know, underrated maybe. And I think for that, I had an idea, and now I'm wondering if you added breakout player as well. So I'm wondering if I have to,
yep,
I have to go for two different categories. I mean, okay, let's talk about the fullback position then briefly. Like, if we're going to go unsung, that's like one of the positions on the roster where a clear starter is not evident. My confidence in Luis Martins to like play a full season at a high level is low. I'm going to say that, you know what, why not? I'm buying the Ryan Raposo at fullback experiment. He took a big step forward last season. We've lauded him, given him third sub of the year awards. I think let's say that the fullback experiment for Raposo is going to be successful in the way it wasn't for Christian Dahomey. And I think ultimately, if he wants to play consistent minutes, that's his chance to get minutes. So maybe he's not going to have a ton of goals and assists, but he might just quietly fill that role. And that would be a great unsung player of the year performance.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to go Tristan Blackman. I think it's one where his contributions last year were quite understated at times. And when he got injured for a while, you could really feel his absence. So I think it's one where, if we're talking the Whitecaps being a good team defensively and whatnot, I think it all Tristan Blackman's going to be a very underrated part of that. So I'm just going to go Tristan Blackman.
Yeah, hard to argue with that, especially if there's a lot of consistency at the back there and some quality players around him. He could just settle in and have a really good season, which I think would be tremendous. Okay, one of our favorites. We obviously award this at the end of the year, but we're going to predict it at the beginning of the year. The third sub of the year award. I feel like this one, well, you know, Toss Ricketts was just, we got to give him a shout out. I mean, he's retired now, part of the organization. I still can't quite get
he's
over
everywhere.
How well Toss played in limited minutes last season. Like it was tremendous. And honestly, it's funny. he's the player comp. When I'm talking about the profile of striker they needed to bring in, really what they needed was a Toussaint Ricketts 10 years younger. That was kind of the profile.
Prime Toussaint Ricketts.
Exactly.
He would have cooked. He would have cooked.
But, you know, shout out to Toss, third sub of the year winner as well. I'm going to go with Ali Ahmed. I feel like that's the natural one, right? I question, as much as I'd love him to get into a starting role, like have this huge breakout season, I think it's more likely that he's a prototypical 85th minute, we need a spark type guy. So Ali Ahmed's going to be my projected third sub of the year.
I like the choice. I do like the choice. I'm going to go for a bit of like a bigger name than we're used to seeing on the third sub of the year award, but I'm just going to go Brian White. I think it's one where I think Brian White could really clean up in a super sub role, just, you know, in a sense where he could come on and do damage. We've seen it before where he's come on late in games and scored goals. I think he's a player suited to that just because he's so like unselfish in the style of play he brings. It's kind of like why Toussaint Ricketts was so good in that role. He's going to come on, work hard, and give you a bit of something. So I'm just going to go Brian White because I feel like he could genuinely bag some good goals in a support role. And I think that's one where that would be a good consistent way of going about it. Good teams, typically you see that a lot of good teams at the high level where they have their number nine, main number nine for 60, 70, 80, 45 minutes, depending on the game, but they're not shy in bringing in their number two if they don't like what they're seeing. And I think Brian White should give Vinny Sartini that confidence. I'm going to go Brian White. A lot of other honorable mentions, but I think it's one where White can be a consistent third sub option.
Okay, last in this category, breakout player of the year. I can't go off the board here. I can't go away from my tendencies. It's going to be Sebastian Berhalter. He's just 21 years old still. I know, you think of him like an MLS veteran, but I think there is still, you know, okay, maybe the ceiling is not huge, but I think MLS quality MLS starter potential is there. And if someone like Schopf or Gressel struggles with injury, if they need some flexibility in the midfield, he'll be the first guy up. And so I think he's maybe as much as anything just in one of the best positions on the squad to be poised to step in if needed. So I'm going with Seb Berhalter.
Good choice. I mean, it's tough. To be honest, I'm torn between a few. I mean, Ryan Raposo, one of them. Can you count him as a breakout player? Ali Ahmed as well.
Last year for Raposo was kind of the breakout, I feel like, unless he can take some huge step. This is like leagues where they hand out comeback player of the year award. And it's like, well, if you were never good and then you just have a great season, is that a comeback? Like how you evaluate stuff is a bit murky.
Yeah, that's it. Where I think one where Raposo's maybe established himself enough. So I thought maybe Ali Ahmed, which I personally, I would believe. I just think what's going to be tough for him is just left back and Martins, and then you've Raposo, then you add in Gutierrez. It's just going to be such a log jam where I think it's one where, like you mentioned, Ali Ahmed this year might just make a lot of his moments off the bench just because maybe playing higher up the pitch just because there's so much at fullback. It might be hard for him to get those starts week in, week out. So I'm going Karifa Yale. Screw it. Like I've been high on him since he signed at Calvary. I think it's one where you look at the center back options. Maybe he slots in. Maybe, you know, something happens to one of the center backs and he gets that shot and he really shines. I'm encouraged by Vanny's, you know, encouragement of Karifa Yale. Everything pointed that, like, hey, it's bold to predict a center back to come in, but if there's a guy who isn't shy in rotating at center backs, it's Vinny Sartini. So it isn't actually that unrealistic to throw out a guy like a Karifa Yale as a guy who maybe comes in, grabs a spot and never looks back and, you know, stakes out his claim, not just for the Whitecaps, but hopefully one day for Canada.
I think with Yao, it's one of those things where if everyone around him on the back line is performing well and he can just plug in, then it might really set him up for success, right? Where he's not asked to do too much, just sort of play his role. So I think if that's going to happen, that's the kind of scenario he's going to he's going to fall into. Okay, well, that was a lot of talk about the season ahead. Some good predictions there. I think we're mostly on the same page. You potentially slightly more optimistic than me, but I'm just jaded from years of experience. I can't help but just have that lingering suspicion about, oh, what's going to go wrong? Okay, final general Whitecaps note here, and not an insignificant one, before we move on to a little quick RSL preview on the back end. It's the new kit. We talk about kits in this show. It's been a fixture for as long as we've been doing it. And I think really, really, really mixed reaction was my impression of this new kit. It's got elements of the hoop. It's got elements of the inaugural 2011 kit with the lines across the chest. The red was a bit of an out of the blue. You know, it was one of that thing you kind of provided a hint that there was going to be something surprising about the kit that people didn't quite see coming. And I think, you know, the bloodlines element was certainly not something people necessarily would have expected. Telus definitely looks different. It's going to be a bit of an adjustment to get used to, but nice to see is integrated in a very clean, cohesive way. Nothing too aggressive or, you know, sort of overly distracting from the overall theme of the kit. So my thought, Alex, is that this is like a very firm 5 or 6 out of 10. Totally gets the job done, but in no way memorable or special. Anyone who's listened to this show for a long time knows that I'd like one of the kits to be a little more traditional, and then I just want them to go completely crazy with the other kit. Like, make it tie-dye, make it something ridiculous, bring back Arbutus Brown. Like, I just want to see them go off the board. And this was very much the opposite of that. It was very stock, very standard, very safe. And that was a little bit disappointing to me, but at the same time, I can also understand why they did it. It fits with the identity that they've been building over the last couple of seasons. I think some people were quite excited in the lead up. Some of the graphics the Whitecaps were using were sort of in that like V shape. And some people were suspecting that might have been a concept for the kit.
V hoop.
And that would have been tremendous. I would have preferred that, I think, far more than the kit they came out with. But again, I think they just went for consistency, cohesiveness over doing something crazy. And as much as I can respect that, I just it left me a little bit underwhelmed.
I'd say it was a 6 out of 10, and I don't think that's a bad thing, because this is their white kit. I think they made it no secret that over their time they want to be the Whitecaps. They want to be the team in white. You know, it's not like the 70s where they were maybe a team that liked to be a little more mix between if they're white or blue, and I think that's fair, and I think that's good, because sometimes it's good just to have that strong visual identity. It's good in terms of marketing, it's good in terms of identity. We always talk about the importance of having an identity on the pitch. Sometimes it's important off the pitch just to know what you're going to get and be recognizable. I think if you're talking about a team that internationally, you want to be recognizable. You look at, for example, the CF Montreal, formerly known as the Impact, and the absolute fight they've had to be known as what they want to be known at. I think it's good that the Whitecaps have embraced a hoop because it's part of their tradition, that they've embraced white, embraced the blue, etc. The red, you know, yeah, it's a bit jarring at first, but hey, they've had red numbers on their last few kits. They have, and I like the message that it sends with the blood part, so I'm not too plussed about that. You know, the idea of donating blood and the importance of that. So I think overall it's a 6 out of 10. Yeah, it's not something that's not going to knock me on the floor, but I think sometimes you need that for your home kit just because it's such an important part of your identity. It's one where teams are going to be knowing you by. What I think this means is that they have to hopefully go all out next year. So I think the Seattle Sounders, funnily enough, have struck such a perfect balance. And honestly, the Portland Timbers, the two close Whitecaps rivals, in the sense where, look at Seattle, it's always green and blue. Like, there's been iterations where they have the patterns on the front, they have more blue shoulders, et cetera, but you know it's going to be green and blue. But if you look at the second kits, like, you get Jimi Hendrix, just freaking awesome, the purple kit, like one of my favorite kits to see. You look at now this Bruce Lee red kit, like, looks absolutely fire. And you've seen some of the other second kits, like their black and pink kit from back in the day, some of these other funky combo. Look at Portland as well, where they had like their rose kit, which was just such a unique and cool idea, etc. I think that's the way to go about it. But I do think the Whitecaps thing is slept on, because I think maybe this is just my perspective, having seen the other side of it. Look at TFC this year. Like, cool kit in the sense of their idea, like the Onyx. It's like a, you know, a tradition they've had for, you know, pretty much their time in MLS. It's like the Jermaine Defoe days. Like, it's a throwback to their 2017 year where they kind of had the gray in that their kit and they won the cup that year. And you love a lot of, like, it's supporter design and all that, but that's their main kit. Now heading into this year, their main kit is gray with a touch of red. And then it's a white and gray backup kit. Like, this is Toronto FC. This is, they will see red. This is the Reds. And they have barely any red on their kit. And I think that's disappointing because, yeah, in isolation, the two kits are fine, but they lose a bit of their visual identity by doing what they did. And I think with the Whitecaps, you do want to maintain that at least in some form of a kit. And then hopefully next year they go off. Like, honestly, be ridiculous. Be like, I'm talking green. I mean, maybe not green because of your rivals, but do the green of one of the trees here. Like, do something ridiculous. Like, do the fall kit. Like, do a kit based on the model of the leaves of Vancouver fall. Like, you know, do a lit kit. Like, do a pride kit where it's like rainbow, you know, in colors involved, and it's kind of fun and has that sort of colors. Do something, you know, something along those lines where you're leaning into something that's, you know, very unique and important to the city, but also fun. Heck, do a First Nations Indigenous kit Pacific style where you're just leaning in and having an absolute stunning design the way they did it. Because I think that's the way to go, where you have your main kit, like your white and blue, and you know what you're going to get, but then completely go and have some fun. And have fun too while embracing local communities. I think that's an important part, because if you did a First Nations kit, if you did a Pride kit, if you did something along those lines, that gives you an opportunity to partner with the local group and really continue to grow your footprint on the community, which I also think is doubly as important as a football club as branding is as well.
One just final thought here on the kits, and this is more of like a personal note that just says something about my taste, is that if they want to continue to embrace the hoop and the sort of throwback characteristics, I would like to see a collar as part of that concept. Now, I don't know if that's an Adidas specific thing where maybe they're prevented from doing certain things based on, you know, the in air quotes templates that Adidas provides. But man, yeah, if you're going to try to harness some of those throwback vibes, I just feel like the collar adds a whole different element. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think if I was designing this white kit and you want to kind of go for the traditional cohesive identity, I just might have leaned more into the throwback nature, just continued that. Whereas it feels like with this, they kind of went, oh, we're going to go throwback, but we're also going to go some new elements. And it feels a little bit confused. And I think something like a collar, just a cleaner, more pure white design, at least you're going Johnny throwback and you just embrace that wholeheartedly. This just, it feels a little stuck in between ideas.
Yeah, and I think that's also an important element to consider. But I guess, as we know, as MLS, shout out the 2020 kits where they all had that thick 25th anniversary collar. Collars are always going to be a bit of a weird one with Adidas. But hey, I'll be honest, we bashed Adidas in the past for some of the kits they have. A lot of new teams this year have gone off the board, like Colorado Rapids, their kit looks stunning. Minnesota United, I love just how wacky and off the board that one is. Like the Bruce Lee kit over at Seattle. Like, a lot of these kits have been fun. Heck, that Galaxy kit, like that Fiesta style kit, like, sign me up. Like the green with the yellow and red in. Like, there's been a lot of cool kits. So it's exciting to know, because the Whitecaps, I know they do have a lot of brain trust in kits that have been working, because usually it takes 2 to 3 years. So they've been already working on this kit for a while now. I'm very curious to see what sort of direction they head next year, because feels like they have a lot to work with. Heck, next year is the 45th anniversary of that, you know, of course, the Soccer Bowl team. Not that they're going to lean into that, but you may be bringing some elements of that back. Heck, I'm sure there's an 86ers anniversary somewhere that they could lean into. Go black and red like the 86ers. Tell me that wouldn't be absolutely fun. Like, if not, embrace one of the local groups. So I'm very curious, because for all the trash we've talked about Adidas, they have stepped things up lately, at least given teams a little more freedom. So yeah, I mean, other than that, one thing I also did mention, shout out to TELUS at least offering a simple design, because I do think they easily could have gone with their bigger, like, flower, that little flower logo that they have, and really put that all over the front of their kit. So the fact that they used a simplified version of their logo, like, hey, that's kind of cool that the team already has a good partnership like that, where it's, yeah, it's a sponsorship, but it's not like overly flashy.
Well, Alex, you know who is another team that announced a new kit this season that I actually quite liked? Real Salt Lake, the all gold.
That is cool.
Salt Lake, over the seasons, they've had some underwhelming, uninspiring kits. This year, not one of them. And that transitions us pretty nicely into the upcoming matchup this Saturday at BC Place, the one everyone's looking forward to. And Alex, let's just dive into RSL, which, you know, as we've sort of mentioned off the top, they snuck into the playoffs, -2 goal differential, without Demir Krylak most of the season, really, really struggled to score goals, especially when Sergio Cordova wasn't involved. But they've made a couple additions. Just getting Krylak back will make a difference. And this is a team that was really solid defensively and hasn't lost too many pieces from that picture. So curious for your just overall impressions of RSL and what you're expecting on Saturday.
RSL, weird, weird outfit. Like, you look, they've somehow quietly just made back-to-back playoffs under Pablo Mastroianni, who, we have to remember, was hired like a day after Vanni Sartini. So like, you kind of almost compare the eras, but it's just funny because they did it in such a weird way. Like, the first year was just grind, be defensively solid. They made it in the playoffs. And then David Ochoa had the best 3 weeks of his career, seeing how things have gone for him since that playoffs, where he turned into a penalty shootout magic. Like, they had that game against the Sounders where they didn't have a shot and they won. Like, it's just been weird. And then like the next year, you look at their stats last year, they weren't all that remarkable offensively, but they were very solid defensively. So that's, credit goes to Mastroianni there for that. And, you know, the pieces they had, and Justin Glad, I mean, Sergio Cordova as well, did his thing up front, just being the piece that they needed, especially with no Krylak, who was so key the year before for Mastroianni, and make the playoffs again. Don't do as well, of course, but hey, making the playoffs back-to-back year is always impressive for a team of RSL's budget. So it's one where under Mastroianni, we've become accustomed to seeing a fair few things, which they should be relatively sorted in their 4-2-3-1. They should defend well. That should not be an issue. And then from there, they're just going to hope for a bit of magic from, you know, Krylak, from Rubio Rubin, from Justin Merrim if he starts, or, you know, some of their new wingers that they have. Obviously, Jefferson Savarino is still around. And then Andres Gomez, their new addition out wide. Like, it's going to be one where we're going to look for a little individual magic from RSL, because otherwise they're just a very defensively solid, foundational, no-nonsense team, and they've proven that over the last 2.5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the other thing I look at, too, is defensively they've been very good, but depth, I think, there is a bit of a concern. Losing Aaron Herrera to CF Montreal, Adrian Brody is your other fullback. Like, it's just, it's a bit uninspiring there. It feels like if everything goes right, they're a really good defensive team. I mean, Zach McMath, a player that the Whitecaps are familiar with, and net, is getting up there in age, kind of played, you know, average minutes for RSL last season. So I just feel like the margins there are a bit thin. They're relying on a lot to go right in order to keep up their pace, improve a little bit, and qualify for the playoffs again this season. You mentioned Andres Gomez. He's really the biggest notable addition for RSL this offseason. Very similar profile coming out of Colombia to Deber Caicedo. So sort of a smaller, pacey winger who can take on players 1v1. And I think, yeah, best case scenario, they kind of get a Deber Caicedo quality of player out of him. And obviously it takes some time to integrate as well. So I do think, though, that, you know, Jefferson Savarino and Gomez together, like, if you can really get those guys going on the wings, that's at least something to be excited about and create a little more space for Krylak. And then just, I mean, you know, the Whitecaps are obviously responsible for this, but without Cordova, their striking options are a little bit limited. I think that's definitely an area to be concerned about. I mean, you mentioned pre-show, Anderson Julio, you know, tends to kill the Whitecaps, but overall, that's just not a great group. So I think there's definitely weaknesses on this roster, and I wouldn't be surprised if they take a step back this season, to be honest.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's one where defensively solid teams will always go far, especially a guy like Pablo Ruiz in the middle. I think he's always been someone that from what I've seen, is very solid. It's just, it feels like a team that they're going to go as far as their forwards take them. And last year, Cordova was able to just do enough to get into the playoffs. But I'm curious to see, because I think, yeah, you look at Justin Glad and Marcelo Silva, Brian Oviedo at fullback with, you know, Brody or, you know, whoever else, because they brought in, you know, a new center back from Colombia. The name's escaping me.
I just wanted to fact check myself. I said Adrian Brody like the actor. It's Andrew Brody is the fullback for RSL. I conflate those two often. So just wanted to correct myself there.
It's your Caicedo versus Cordova. But yeah, I mean, the defensively they're solid. I think even Zach McMath, he's always consistently been at the minimum average keeper, who's actually had some like elite seasons mixed in there. Like, he can go off and have a season. So I think their defending is not going to be an issue. It's just up front, they have a lot of question marks. I think it's, does Justin Merrim still have some magic in his legs? Is Jefferson Savarino going to be able to play at the DP level? Is Rubio Rubin going to build off of what was a flash in the pan like 2 years ago now and then nothing really since? Is Anderson Julio going to get some consistency, for example? There are some long shots, so to speak, if that's the right term, that we didn't talk about. I think, for example, that they were able to pick up Danny Musovski. I know, for example, Caleb Wilkins, a friend of the show, of course, has been very high on Musovski over his time at LAFC. And I think it was, I want to say San Jose was he at before back in the day, or maybe I'm just hallucinating, but Musovski always been someone very underrated, just couldn't crack that absolutely stacked LAFC front line. So maybe a guy like Musovski could be the missing Cordova replacement they didn't know they needed. If not, another guy I'm just looking at the roster, I'm like, okay, that's someone who, you know, we'll see how much he plays with the first team, but it's 6'1", 15-year-old Axel Kai. It's one where, he's 15, it's not to say much, but he's already played at the MLS Next Pro level. He signed his first deal when he was like 14. It's someone where, hey, maybe he, as the season gets along, he fills in and really grows in and, you know, turns 16 and goes off. So it's somewhere, maybe if some of those guys hit, we could be talking about a whole different RSL team. But of course, those are a lot of question marks offensively, especially relying on a 15-year-old or a guy like Musovski who hasn't had that chance to get consistency. But it's really one where they're relying on that to happen, which, hey, we'll see how far those goals can take them, because I do think at the very least their defense should make them frustrating to play each night out. And sometimes in MLS, that's all you need to at least be a borderline, a playoff threat, as RSL have proved in the past.
Absolutely. I mean, looking a little bit directly at Saturday, let's just chat about the three potential interesting roster decisions for the Whitecaps. And I mean, two of these I think are not really big decisions, other than the fact that these players are still getting up to fitness and integrated with the squad. So first, Alex, do we think we see Yohei Takaoka start over Thomas Asahl on opening day for Vancouver?
No brainer. He started the Minnesota United preseason game, went 90, kept a clean sheet. He's been training. I think he's the one that's penned in, I'd say.
Absolutely. I think that's all they need to see. I will shout it as well. I like Takaoka. He was wearing the different color goalkeeping shorts with the, like, it was purple goalkeeping shorts with the pink socks and the pink top. And I was just, that was,
and the white Under Armour just to throw people off.
That was a vibe. I really like that. Completely nonsensical, but I just wanted to point that out. Okay, so
you better keep that up.
The other position, I feel like this one's a little bit more in the air, and Vanni Sartini didn't give an obvious answer. Do we get Brian White or Sergio Cordova up front against RSL?
I think we're going to get Sergio Cordova. I think surely for your former team, you start him. He is fit from what they've said.
Maybe he only goes 65 minutes and then Brian White comes on.
Yeah, I just think it's one where, I don't know. Actually, I'm torn now that I think about it. Like, maybe White goes 45, Cordova goes 45 off the bench. But I don't know. I just think it's one where, based on what we're saying, former team, you want to get him up and running. Like, it's a position where I'm sure he's managed to gain enough familiarity. So I'm going to be bold and say he does, but it's one where I do think either way he's going to feature heavily in some role.
Yeah, I'm just going to go with Brian White starting and Cordova sort of planned substitution off the bench, gets at least 35 minutes. I'm always the first guy to say, oh, he'll start. And then it feels like teams often go more conservative than I'm anticipating. So that says nothing about, you know, either of the players. That's just sort of prognosticating how I feel like the you know, the physical preparedness staff is going to want to treat it. Okay, the third one, this truly is a wide open contest. That open fullback position, Luis Martins, Ryan Raposo, Christian Gutierrez is not going to be ready to go. Jermaine Brown could start. Ali Ahmed, very outside shot. I think ultimately it's probably down to Raposo and Martins. And I'm going to be super boring here and say that Luis Martins gets to start, because I feel like that's the no-nonsense opening day decision.
I would say the same, but I'm going to be exciting, and I'm going to say Raposo. And why do you think I say Raposo? It's the Vancouver Whitecaps. It's their opening game, MLS. They cannot start that day without a Canadian on the field. So I'm going to go Ryan Raposo. Just purely the fact if they went out with zero Canadians, I would feel wrong. And if Raposo's, you know, I feel like Raposo will have done enough in training, and I think it would be a bit of a different look at fullback.
Also, if you can't play Raposo against a team like RSL that traditionally hasn't offered a lot of, you know, super dangerous attacking play, then who are you going to start Ryan Raposo against? So I think you're right. And yeah, having that Canadian in there on opening day, it would be a bit, I don't want to say embarrassing, just unfortunate.
Just feels wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't not have a Canadian start a home opener in Vancouver. There should be a law of the game against that.
Yeah, like it should be one where it's like, yeah, you get like docked points or something like that. Like, like you're a Canadian team. Yeah, it's an American league, but it just feels wrong. Like, surely, like, yeah, every year there's always been like a Tybert, or even like you go back like Cavallini, you know, Crepeau. Like, it just feels wrong. Heck yeah. Remember the year in 2019 where you didn't think there'd be any Canadians and Crepeau won that spot and he was in opening day. Derek Cornelius also in that opening day lineup, if you're talking about guys who, can MNT regulars now, or, you know, players of that like. So, hey, maybe Raposo ends up sneaking in as is tradition, because I do remember a few past opening days where some Canadians snuck in and did well for themselves on opening day. Heck, remember Alfonso Davies sneaking into a few opening days when he was 16 and 17. Heck, he scored his first ever MLS goal on opening day versus Montreal back in the day in 2018. So, hey, it's always some good vibes associated with Canadians on opening day. So would be wrong.
Good memories. Hopefully Ryan Raposo can continue that tradition. And really, since we've been recording this show, just saw a highlight reel goal that Raposo scored at training at BC Place. So maybe he can produce a little bit of that on the weekend. Okay, Alex, this is kind of the final item on the docket. Score prediction, result prediction for the season opener against RSL. I'm just going to come out and say it. I think that, you know, we talked about the season where everything goes right for the Whitecaps. I think everything goes right for the Whitecaps in this home opener. I like this matchup for them. I like the position their squad is in. I'm going to say it's a confident 2-0 win for the Vancouver Whitecaps. They keep a clean sheet. They find a couple goals. And they're off to a good start to the regular season.
I can't disagree with you. I was going to say 2-0 myself, so I'm just going to go 3-0. They get an extra goal. They get the confidence flying. I agree. Get a clean sheet as well. Get their legs under him. So naturally, we've just blessed the 1-0 RSL win, so come back to it. But yes, no, I do think it's a home opener where everything's set up for them to give the fans a show and hopefully get their season off on the right track. And for the first time, boy, I guess in 2021, they did start with a win, I want to say, because they won 1-0 against Portland, Cavallini header, bit of a throwback. But, you know, for the first time since I want to say a while, because I think in my head, 2020, they didn't start with a win. 2019, they didn't start with a win. You know, get a win for the first time since 2018 at home on a home opener.
Yeah, they haven't had a pure home opening win in the sense we're meeting for quite a while. And I think it goes, you know, not to delve too far into hyperbole, but like it does go a long way to starting your season on the right foot, right? If you get that that experience with the supporters on opening day, and it goes a long way for the fan environment in Vancouver, right? Like we know that Vancouver as a sports market can be a bit fickle and a bit choosy, and you know, if you don't go into the summer with the team at front of mind, people just don't tune in. So getting people interested, getting people involved early in the season is absolutely crucial, and the best way to do that is to win football matches and win them convincingly. So hopefully that's the way the Whitecaps can start off their season.
Yeah, I mean, fingers crossed, because 3 points on the board, it pays off at the end of a long season, especially at home. You want to get, what do we say in MLS, win your home games, get points on the road. So no better way to start off here than getting a home win to get the wind under your sails, get some new signings comfortable, maybe get a debut goal for Cordova, maybe a debut clean sheet for Takaoka, et cetera, et cetera. And then just let the season go. Maybe get Gold going early, Vite, et cetera, et cetera. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, feels good. Sun is shining in Vancouver. The team's in place. Now it's just meant to see if the sun will shine on Vancouver's soccer hopes for the rest of the year, at least for the Whitecaps. Of course, Vancouver FC still around. We'll talk about them eventually as they continue their preseason progress and preparation. But for now, focusing on the Whitecaps and excited to see what happens. So, I mean, I'll be at the game. I'm excited to see what the Whitecaps can do against RSL. So can't wait to see you there. And then I guess in the meantime, find me on Twitter at Alex Gungaruzic, at BTS Fan City, btsfancity.com. And yeah, happy start of your MLS season and how to all who celebrate.
Yeah, I'm going to finish off the show with a very, very brief airing of grievances. As much as I like where the league's going with this new Apple MLS TV deal, the start times being so consistently at 7:30 Pacific is an absolute horror show for me. It means 3:30 a.m. starts consistently here in the UK. So I haven't really come up with a plan for how I'm going to deal with that yet. That's a
good luck.
That's a tomorrow. That's a couple weeks down the road type problem in terms of how I'm going to handle. So I haven't decided, am I going to stay up for the opening match? Am I just going to, you know, I'm going to try to get sleep first and then like set an alarm and wake up for it? Am I just going to watch it on tape delay early in the morning? I don't know. We're going to have to get some kind of process going here. But yeah, happy for most of you out there that you don't have to deal with that problem. I hope you enjoyed the season preview. I hope you're getting excited for MLS opening weekend as much as we are. Thank you for listening, and we'll chat again soon.